Count your blessings, ladies and gentlemen, because this is Brian Pillman Jr., and you're listening to the most influential podcast. You're listening to the Pro Wrestling Proverbs.
TNA Wrestling, Impact Wrestling, NWA DNA, Global Force Wrestling. It's had a lot of names. It's always been looked at as, you know, the little brother in professional wrestling. It's been on its deathbed more times than I'm sure it's like to admit. But one thing is it's always surviving. It's always just hanging on. And I think one of the bigger reasons for that is they know how to do a debut or a tease. They've had a lot of superstars come through the doors. I mean, hell, their first world champion was Ken Shamrock, making his comeback to professional wrestling after being gone from WWE for a couple of years. But Impact recently signed one of the more polarizing women in professional wrestling in Trinity Fatu. Herself and her former partner, Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné, of course, you know, depending on how you feel about it, famously or infamously walked out of the WWE while they were the women's tag team champions. Mercedes already, you know, she went to Japan, had a big feud, big time heel, and everyone was wondering where Naomi would pop up. Would she be back in WWE? Would she follow Mercedes to Japan? Would she show up in AEW, who always has great success with former WWE women? Hi, Ruby. She got announced for Impact. And it was funny, the reason that we're doing this episode is because I saw someone on Twitter said that if she was used correctly, her Impact signing could be comparable to when Impact signed Kurt Angle.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like before we even get there, though.
Perk Angle.
He was definitely at the time. Kurt, you're a great guy. I loved meeting you in Indiana, but he had some demons there, bud.
Do you think he knows? Does he know that meme?
I'm sure he did, but he also seems like, you know, the uncle that doesn't know how to use technology.
Like, he knows how to do, like, his thing. Like, he knows how to, like, go on Twitter.
Yeah.
Open his email.
How to make certain memes.
Open, like, Cameo.
He did the one Royal Rumble meme where it's like, ooh, the Royal Rumble's at 7, and he sits up in his hotel bed, and then he said, not tonight, and put the covers back over his face. but, yeah. So I guess even before Kurt Angle, though, TNA had a history of bringing in WWE talent. They had a history of just bringing in big-name talent that wasn't signed in general. I mentioned Ken Shamrock, literally Jeff Jarrett, because he helped start the promotion. Scott Hall was a big one. WWE had recently canned him because of Plane Ride from Hell incident and some other drug-related issues. But Scott was a main event contender for the first few years in TNA's history. Dusty Rhodes was there in the main event, and so was the Legion of Doom, fighting AJ Styles. But the first big name that comes to mind, and I'm not going to use any list for this, I'm not looking online, this is just, because I've watched TNA almost from the beginning, but the first big name that I remember jumping ship and showing up in TNA was Jeff Hardy. This would have been, 2003-ish? So the first time he was let go by WWE, he showed up for a match with AJ Styles. And from there, he was in the main event scene pretty much until he made his first comeback to WWE. He fought the likes of Nash, Jarrett, and Scott Hall. He feuded for the X Division title. Jeff Hardy was a big player in Impact. He also teamed up with Macho Man in Macho Man's one partial appearance for TNA. After Hardy, You had ECW people like Raven and Rhino, both of whom became NWA TNA heavyweight champions. Both of whom feuded with Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett was the big main event guy until Kurt Angle got there, and even a little bit after Angle was there. And the next one after Jeff Hardy that comes to mind was Christian. And I think Christian benefited the most from the jump.
He became like a fucking huge deal.
Yeah, when he's one of the first times that I can remember in recent memory where he told WWE he was leaving, and they're like, oh God, no. And they pushed him to the main event. He was like this. And he fought with Cena, and he left. Showed up in Impact, won the title. In his time in TNA, he led a group called Christian's Coalition. It was him, AJ Styles, and Tomko. He feuded with Sting. He feuded with Angle. He feuded with Samoa Joe.
Do you think he knew, like he saw through it when he was leaving? Like, oh, they're just giving me this push because I want to leave and go here. And as soon as he signed that new contract...
Yep.
Oh, sorry, buddy, you're in a tag team ladder match again this year.
Yeah, I mean, and it was it's unfortunate because at the time, I mean, this was after he had already been in the first Money in the Bank. He had already done his thing with Jericho and Trish. He'd been a big heel on Raw. He was the first Intercontinental Champion after they brought it back, after Triple H combined the two titles. So, I mean, he was doing everything but winning the world title. So to be able to go to TNA, be the main event guy, be the guy, really added to his career. I honestly think that's what helped when he came back to WWE, and they instantly made him ECW champion. Mm-hmm. Christian wasn't the only one. I mean, I said Jeff Hardy, I said Christian. So which Dudley boy jumped ship? It was actually both. Bubba Ray tells it in the Straight Outta Dudleyville documentary that, you know, they'd done everything they could in WWE. They tried splitting them up and it didn't work. So, you know, after the first one night stand, because they pretty much sat at home for the remainder of their contract, they came back for one night stand, then they left again. They came to TNA. What does everyone do when they come to TNA? They fight Jeff Jarrett. They feud with Jeff Jarrett. The Dudleys actually got to fight America's Most Wanted, one of TNA's biggest tag teams of all time, but especially in the infant years. It was young James Storm and Chris Harris. And the Dudleys, I mean, they dominated the tag team scene until they split. And then even after that, Bubba Ray, who was Bully Ray then, dominated the heavyweight division. They fronted the Aces and Eights. Devon won their secondary championship. I mean, until they left and came back to WWE, the Dudleys, again, they were main eventers for TNA. And it's not like they were old guys coming in. You know, sure, they had a long career, but this isn't like when Hogan came to TNA and couldn't really add anything. They still had a lot to prove, a lot to show. And they worked well with the young guys. Again, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, America's Most Wanted, Team Canada, which was Bobby Roode, Eric Young, Petey Williams, the now front runner of TNA, Scott D'Amore, was the manager.
I'm sorry. While we were talking, I was looking up stuff about TNA, and I came across that guy's picture. That guy looks like a fucking nerd.
Who's Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't have much room to talk, but holy shit.
But the Dudleys, the big thing I remember is around this time they were doing the one-night stands. I think it was for the second one-night stand. Might have been for the WWE ECW show. Rhino and Spike Dudley ripped up their contracts saying they were with TNA. You know, the Dudleys said, oh, we were told we could come back. We didn't want to. We're going to be here. It was a big moment for the company. Wasn't always positives, though. People jumping. I mentioned Hogan when Hulk Hogan came over. So I've been reading up on this recently. I guess we've talked about how Hulk Hogan was supposed to be on WrestleMania 23. I guess the reason that didn't happen, him and Big Show, is he feels Vince lowballed him, which he felt Vince did that the year he fought Randy Orton at SummerSlam. So then Hogan went and was supposed to have a Legends match with Jerry Lawler in Memphis. Vince McMahon did everything he could to make it not happen, so then it ended up being Hogan and Big Show there. So Hogan went to TNA, started the new Monday Night Wars that lasted barely any time because Vince brought Bret Hart back and a lot of eyes were glued to WWE. When Hogan went to TNA, they tried to recreate WCW Nitro, where, if you remember, Hulk Hogan brought a lot of his friends. This time around, it wasn't, you know, Earthquake, Big Boss Man. It was Val Venus and Orlando Jordan and a very bad point in their life, Sean Waltman and Scott Hall, and the Nasty Boys, who haven't really been good in the ring since the mid-90s, let alone 2010. That was a bad jump for TNA. Another one around this time. Oh, he was right there. You've got Taz came in from WWE as he was an announcer there. He came in to manage Samoa Joe, and then he slowly just fell into a commentator role. Matt Hardy's initial TNA debut, again, a bad point in his life. I think it was cold-hearted Matt Hardy. Definitely far from the broken Matt that we know of today. There's just, and this all, again, was within, you know, that Hulk Hogan era. So clearly there's two sides to how you can be used in TNA. And it's not just for, you know, they don't just take from WWE. I mean, they've had, you know, Sting. Kevin Nash went there after his last WWE run. But, I mean, can you really call him a WWE guy? Same thing with Scott Steiner.
Right.
That's where Booker T went after his first WWE run. But, again, he had done everything in WWE that you could do. It's just it's a double-edged sword. I don't think so much now because you have actual, you know, wrestlers like Scott D'Amore, Tommy Dreamer, Lance Storm helps out running the company. Then you had Dixie Carter and her family running it. You know, they saw the money signs. They saw Hulk Hogan. I mean, and by Hulk going there, it just ruined everything. Not all legends that jump ship were there for the money. Mick Foley actually showed up after, so this would have been after the Edge feud. This would have been after he was in the main event match at Vengeance for that WWE title. He came to Impact. He actually won the TNA heavyweight title as Cactus Jack. But if you go back and watch those matches, Mick Foley laid it out on the line. This was his true last run. And Hogan coming in kind of stalled it. Hogan also brought with him Ric Flair, who supposedly retired in WWE, had some not-so-great matches in TNA. We've talked about it before here on the podcast. They were a lot worse than his WWE matches, clearly, at the end.
Yeah.
And I don't even think they were better than his last match. He was just lucky that he got to be in the ring with the likes of, you know, Jay Lethal and AJ Styles. But, you know, with all these TNA debuts, like I said, good or bad, it does do one thing. It brings publicity to the company, which is something that it always needs, because we've talked about on a previous podcast, but it's hard to watch Impact ever since they left Spike TV, really, because it seems like their time slot or their channel or their app is constantly jumping. So you don't really know when you can sit down and watch them. So by having, you know, Hulk Hogan, Mick Foley, people like that showing up, at least you'll get a press release like when Naomi signed. I mean, I don't even think she officially debuted yet when we received the press release that Trinity Fatu had signed and that she was appearing at a specific show. And then Instagram posted a video of it, and then it was on Twitter, and it's big news. Especially for a women's division that has been overrated since... Or not overrated, excuse me, that has been underrated, underappreciated since it first began. I mean, you can have Trinity versus Mickie James if she's able to come back, Trinity versus Jordan Grace, Trinity versus Deonna Peruzzo. I know Gail Kim still helps out and makes appearances every so often. That would be a dream match to have. I think the sky's the limit. Do I think her debut is going to could mean as much to TNA as Kurt Angle's debut, his signing? No, only because in TNA's heyday, they did weekly pay-per-views or monthly pay-per-views, one of them. When they first got a TV deal, Kurt Angle was kind of the Hulk Hogan, where Hogan came in for Nitro and was that big name that was attached to it. I don't think Trinity could carry a show on name alone.
No, definitely not.
Now, do I think everything that's followed her recently, you know, walking out, Michael Cole, you know, blasting her and Mercedes on TV, the where will they show up next, all that following her, I think that'll bring in the wrestling purist, the, you know, hardcore fan, but I don't think it's going to bring in the casual viewer like people think it will. Now, that being said, is it still a good sign? Yeah, it's a hell of a sign. Especially when you know WWE, it's been reported they tried to bring her back. I'm assuming they were going to put her with the Bloodline. That makes the most sense to me. You know, AEW was trying to bring her in. And I'm sure, you know, Mercedes was trying to talk her into going to Japan. But Impact is going to feel the glow. And, I mean, good for both parties involved. Hopefully this is more a Kurt Angle Christian situation and not so much a Hulk Hogan Matt Hardy situation.
I don't see myself tuning into Impact just for Trinity. Something would drastically have to change for that to happen.
Maybe she forms a lady bloodline. They steal Tamina. They sign Nia Jax. They steal The Rock's daughter. That's all I can come up with.
I'd be behind that if The Rock's daughter was the one leading it. Because she probably...
Call her the Pebble.
She probably has the most charisma out of the four of those people you just named.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot would have to happen for me to watch Impact regularly. Because, like we said last week, I'm like an old man now. I can't stay up that late. There's this guy I know. I can't even do this. This is something I could do. I just choose not to cause for my sanity. This okay. guy, I know. I work with him. Shout out Scott. He will record Raw, SmackDown, NXT, both AEW shows, and Impact.
Okay.
Because he works the same schedule. We work overnights together. But he does it full time. Well, I don't. And he'll watch them all on his 2 days off. In his 2 days, he'll send home and he'll watch them in order, like release order, from like the last one he watched. And I always joke, I'm like, you're like the one of 10 people that watch Impact regularly.
Right.
And I don't think I could even do that. That's a lot of wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, like we said last week, that it's almost too much.
You just need to have a break.
Oh yeah, 100%.
You know, you can't watch. I guess we must not just be real wrestling fans then, Logan.
I mean, I guess not.
if we're not watching 40 hours of wrestling,
I'll admit, I don't think I've seen. I don't think I've regularly watched Raw or SmackDown. Probably since our junior year of college. So I know we watched Raw most weeks in the dorms. Yeah. And I know we'd catch SmackDown if there was a cool match.
Back then SmackDown wasn't worth watching.
No, no. And then, you know, our junior year, it was either our junior year or our senior year they did the draft.
The 2016, that would be our
junior.
I was living at Bluegrass,
and even then I wouldn't watch it regularly. And then when I moved back home, I was like, I can get the results, especially if I'm going to be watching the pay-per-views. And even now, I mean, we don't have cable, and I know there's ways that I can watch it. I just don't.
I can agree. I watch I watch all the pay-per-views for both AEW and
WWE. Wow, hell, I can't even say that. If I'm busy, I just
skip.
Yeah.
Well, watch them live are two different things. To be honest, I forgot Backlash was last Saturday, and like I said at the last episode we recorded, well, last week for the listeners, 10 minutes ago for us.
Yeah.
I fell asleep during it. I kind of just stumbled my way onto Peacock and saw it was on, so I watched that, and I can't tell you the last Impact pay-per-view I watched. I think you said it was that Bound for Glory one where they lied to us.
I was saying, I touched on it earlier. The big thing TNA is good at is advertising, teasing.
Social media marketing.
Yeah. So when they brought Rampage Jackson and Tito Ortiz in, they teased it as former heavyweight champions. They never said which one. Or which promotion. When they brought Booker T in, the tease was a former, multiple-time heavyweight champion, multiple promotions. Well, this was 2007, 2008. So, you know, I thought Goldberg. Because Booker T didn't even come to mind. You're like, oh shit, that Goldberg fits. That's who it's going to be. And then it was Booker. Nothing against him. Or that Bound for Glory pay-per-view. This was after a lot of WWE releases. And they hinted at that. They're like, something about the free agency market's so big. And then they did the Russian flag for Rusev. I forget what they did for Daniel Bryan. I think they might have done an American Dragon. They teased Eric Young. They teased the Iconics. They teased so many people.
You know what it felt like? It was like, I know they didn't actually do this, but what it felt like. They're like, well, you know, we got some debuts coming. And it felt like they just like flashed up like a goat with a beard.
Yeah.
I wonder who it could be, and then it's like a guy drinking a Pepsi.
Yep. Yeah, it was stuff like that. It was just generic, and wrestling fans knew who it was. And I mean, they did it the next year, too.
Yeah, but I was smartened up to their antics that year.
Well, yeah, that year. Fool me once. So many people. Yeah, and it turned out, and again, nothing wrong with Eric Young. Eric Young did great in that match. Just not who we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, no offense to Eric Young. Is he? I'm going to look this up before I say it.
What?
I thought he did some not good things. It could be somebody else. I don't want to.
I don't think he's a bad guy.
Let me just check. You know, I don't want to say nothing nice about the guy or bad about the guy if I don't know.
I mean, I'll just say that he's a great in-ring talent. He was one of those people that when Daniel Bryan first won the world title, it seemed like every promotion would put their championship on a bearded little man who was constantly injured. He was Impact's. Ring of Honor had Michael Elgin. But yeah, all three were bearded little men who had tape all over their body.
Eric Young didn't do anything bad. He did tell Vince McMahon that he was a failure to his face. That's good. That's a good one.
And he's supposedly been signed back to WWE for like 2 months now.
Really?
The rumor was Sanity. Now the rumor's Judgment Day. We'll have to see. You said failure, and we keep saying no offense. Someone did offend me.
Uh-oh.
So WWE on Peacock has the Rivalries series. Hogan and Andre were on there.
That's where you're going with that.
Yeah, Hogan and Andre were on there. Freddie Prinze Jr., which I don't have the quote in front of me, but he, I'm paraphrasing here, said that Hogan and Andre was the first real feud in the WWF. Now, even if we just look at WrestleManias, right? Even if you ignore the fact that, you know, at that same WrestleMania, we had adorable Adrian Adonis and Roddy Piper feuding. We had Ricky Steamboat and Macho Man feuding. Even if you ignore that, let's just ignore that year, because I'm sure someone will bring up that Hogan and Andre started a week before those. And blah, blah, blah. Let's go to WrestleMania 2. Randy Savage and George Steele. Interesting, because George Steele is chasing after Elizabeth. That's a feud. Mr. T and Roddy Piper? It's almost like those two fought it the year before. That's a feud. Let's see if we keep going. Hogan and Bundy. I don't think that was a feud, but Hogan and Bobby Heenan as a whole, 100%. But you know what? Maybe those aren't high-profile enough feuds. You know, maybe they're not Hogan and Andre level. You know, they didn't make the card. Let's go to WrestleMania 1. Junkyard Dog and Greg Valentine / Greg Valentine and Tito Santana for the Intercontinental title. Oh, I know, there's not a lot of stakes on the line. There wasn't a lot of big moments. What about Andre and Big John Studd? You know, Big John Studd, one of the men that cut Andre the Giant's hair. You know, they tranquilized the Giant and they cut his hair. No, not a feud. Okay. Maybe Wendy Richter and Fabulous Moolah, which, you know, Moolah's client was Lalane Kai, the former champ or the champion at the time, who Richter beat. Wendy Richter, of course, accompanied by Cyndi Lauper. What are the big moments for Rock and Wrestling? No, probably not big enough. Probably not big enough for Freddie. What was the main event? I don't remember. Oh yeah, Hogan and Mr. T against Orndorff and Piper. You know, Hogan and Piper, the feud that essentially started the Rock and Wrestling connection. Hogan and Piper, the feud that people still bring up as babyface versus heel, good guy versus bad guy feud. It happened. I'm almost, let me just, I don't want to make any purist angry.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it happened at the Wrestling Classic, too. So, you know, it spanned two pay-per-views before there was really pay-per-views. Yeah, Hogan and Andre. But even you know, Anthony, let's ignore WrestleMania.
Okay. Oh no.
Let's ignore Hogan and Piper. Let's ignore, you know, Andre and Bobby Heenan. Let's go back. In the Superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes WWE documentaries, it's mentioned that the mainstream feud rivalry, three matches that set the course for both gentlemen, was Dusty Rhodes versus Superstar Billy Graham for the WWWF Championship. Main event at Madison Square Garden. Sold out Madison Square Garden. Yeah, but that doesn't matter. You're right. You're right. That wouldn't constitute a feud.
I don't think so.
I mean, if you look at any of the heavyweight champions for Mania, like I said, you had Hogan and versus the Heenan family, which spanned before Mania, all the way through Heenan eventually hanging it up and going to the commentary desk. Iron Sheik didn't have a lot of feuds as a heavyweight champion because, you know, transitional champion. What about Bob Backlund and his legendary feud with Greg the Hammer Valentine? What about Bruno Sammartino and Buddy Rogers?
Not real feud.
Nope. I don't understand what constitutes a real feud because, you know, again, Bruno sold out Madison Square Garden. He supposedly has that record of 90-some times. What about, you know, Pedro Morales? When he was champion, all the men he faced, all the feuds he had. Again, Bob Backlund, the normally patient and coy Bob Backlund yelling, I want to get this one right here. He originally teamed with High Chief Peter Maivia. Peter Maivia turned on him, as heels do. And let's see. What exactly did he... Oh, yes, that's right. He screamed at Vince McMahon that he was going to kill that son of a bitch. That's not a feud. That's not a feud, though.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, there's so many. And it's not like any of these are, you know, deep dives. It's not like I'm, you know, dusting out or pulling a book off the shelf and blowing the dust off it to get these. A lot of these are common, known feuds. Before Hogan and Andre. Ivan Koloff and Bruno Sammartino. What about Stan Hansen and Bruno Sammartino? When Stan Hansen accidentally broke Bruno Sammartino's neck. Or Larry Zbyszko and Bruno Sammartino. You know, the living legend versus the real living legend. And again, these are just ones off the top of my head. I'm sure if I sat down and looked at only WWF, I could find many more. I don't even think Hogan and Andre was the first mainstream. Like I mentioned, Hogan and Piper, or even Wendy Richter and Moolah. It didn't last as long, but with the involvement of Cyndi Lauper and Captain Lou, it was pretty damn mainstream. I just don't understand by someone. I mean, it's not like Freddie Prinze Jr. is some random guy either. He was engraved in the culture. He's a writer for SmackDown. You know, he's now, you know, he talks about how he wanted to start his own promotion, and he's working with one now, and it's not like he's just some random guy. You'd think he would know this. You know what else was before Hogan and Andre?
Who?
In the WWF, Jimmy Snuka and Don Morocco. You know why that feud might sound a little familiar? That's when Snuka dove off the cage. You know, when probably, what, at least 10 professional wrestlers said they wanted to be a wrestler because they saw it? That's not a feud. I don't know, I might be overreacting with it, but to say it's the first real feud...
I would, if I had to guess, like, the first real, quote-unquote, real feud for WWF or WWE, like, it had to be something, if we're thinking, like, just mainstream, like, oh, we're touring the country with this type deal, or the territory, it had to be, probably had to be something with Bruno.
Yeah.
Bruno was the first major champion.
Like I said, Bruno and Zbyszko and Bruno and Hansen are the first two that come to mind. Just because of the press that it got. I mean, even Billy Graham. Billy Graham was such a larger-than-life character. I mean, I'm sure he had real...
Was it Gorilla Monsoon?
Gorilla Monsoon. I don't know if he was Billy's or Bruno's.
I know saying for Bruno.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Let's see. And then I'm looking up Billy Graham now. Now, like I said, the big one is Dusty Rhodes. It was only 3 matches. But ended up being in a Texas Bull Rope match. It was one of the most recognized matches in the WWF. Again, it baffles me that he'd pick Hogan Andre. But even for both those guys, Andre and Stud, and then Hogan and Piper, happened 2 manias before. And for both of their careers... If you're looking at feuds, you're not just looking at a match. Those feuds were more important. Now, would I say that was the first spectacle main event? Yeah. Do I think if there would have been someone other than... It's a double-edged sword. If it would have been someone other than Mr. T at the first Mania... It could have been more of a spectacle, but there wouldn't have been as much eyes on the product.
Right, right.
Obviously, Hogan and Bundy, it was in a cage. Not really a spectacle. Hogan and Andre, 100%. But for it to be the first feud, ignorance. That'd be like if you're looking at someone like John Cena, and you say his first big feud... was with Edge.
It was early, just not the first.
Yeah. And it might be recognized as one of the best, yeah, not the first. He had JBL.
Big Show.
Yeah. Even had, for a little bit of time, he had the Taker feud.
Carlito.
Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
It baffles me. Like I said, I just don't understand where that would come from. Especially someone that's so engraved in the culture. Let's see, did I just find the quote? Oh, it's literally what I've said. Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant was the first real, rivalry that WWE had.
Same thing. Tomato, tomato.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot about this one, because I'm looking at the comments now. Piper and Snuka. Piper smashed that damn coconut over Snuka's head before that. I don't know, there's just so many... And as I said, some of them I've mentioned. Some of them I mentioned are a little bit of deep dives. But a lot of them are just common, you know, you put in a Roddy Piper DVD, you're going to see the snuff on Snuka, you're going to see the stuff on Hogan. You put in a Dusty Rhodes DVD, you're going to see the Billy Graham stuff. You put in a Billy Graham DVD, you're going to see the Bruno and the Dusty stuff. I don't like saying this often, but because I think a lot of takes and a lot of opinions should be viewed from multiple lenses, multiple ideals, and you can make sense of them. But Freddie, can I call you Freddie? That's a bad take. No, that's a shit take.
You know what, Freddie? You're the worst part of the Scooby-Doo movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the guy's name? Lillard?
Matthew Lillard. I've met him. He's great as Shaggy.
Yeah.
Linda Carnellini as Velma does a great job. She acts just like her, looks just like her. Sarah Michelle Gellar is perfect as Daphne. She brings spunk.
And whoever did the CGI for Scooby has more acting ability in their pinky than you do.
And more wrestling knowledge.
Ooh.
First rivalry. I bet you he helped write the Stone Cold showcase in 2K15. What was it, 15?
15.
It was 16. It was 16. Where they're like, oh, Stone Cold was in WCW, remember? Ooh, he was in ECW, remember? Ooh, now he's the Rattlesnake.
That's it. You know, Stone Cold was actually the first wrestling superstar.
Yeah, he was the first. I don't know, a lot of times in wrestling, you can clearly pinpoint the first something. But to be that wrong... I don't get it.
So with that, if you hate Freddie Prinze Jr., I hate's a strong word.
I don't hate him. I hate his opinion.
If you do not like his opinions as much as we do, give us a follow. PW Proverbs, yeah. Pro Wrestling Proverbs, everywhere else. Link tree in the description for all those links. Like I said last episode, we'll keep plugging it for a while. Our podcasts are now being uploaded directly onto YouTube. Now, every week, every podcast, we put up there audio only for now. Maybe video one day. Who knows? We'll see. But make sure you follow along. If you're listening on YouTube, you know, why don't you come over to Spotify or Apple Podcasts too? You know, subscribe and follow us on there. What's the deal? You know, tell him, Logan. What's the deal?
Yeah, there is no deal. I mean, if Hogan and Andre was the first wrestling rivalry in the WWF, then we're the first wrestling podcast you've listened to. Give us a follow. Tell your friends.
We're the first wrestling podcast on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take that. I don't even know who the first one would be. Who do you think, if you had to make a guess, who's the first wrestling podcast on YouTube?
The Colt Cabana one.
He didn't make it popular. But he does, you know, I think we're better
than Colt. Shares a bank account with his mother.
Thank you.
Yep, I know all exactly right. Where you're going.
But we do not. We have our own separate bank accounts.
I have a couple.
I only have one. Well, I have two technically, but yeah. And my PIN number is